Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, check out VeritasWellness.com. You can sign up for wellness classes at VeritasWellness.com. And also for archive shows, check out VeritasMedical.com. You can go there and check out previous shows and things we do right there. So if you're missing out, you can certainly do that. Also, along the way, if you have a question for the good doctor, you can always call or text in at 806-745-5800 right here on today's broadcast. Well, let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
Good morning. And we have Morley on the back line.
First Mondays with Morley. Before we hit to Morley, which today's topic is going to be your immune system and the power of that immune system to fight COVID-19 and other germs. But before we do that, I want to run through a bunch of headlines, and at the end I'll make a point as to why I'm doing this. But these are headlines that I haven't seen in corporate media, not that I watch much of that, but I do scan it to see if they're talking about some of these things, and for the most part, I would say no, they're not. So I'd like to mention them just to encourage people to go find some independent media to follow. I think it'll help broaden your thinking. First one, this was published November 26, 2020, so just around Thanksgiving. John Hopkins newsletter, which this is a newsletter published by the students at Johns Hopkins. Since 1896, they've been publishing this newsletter. And Yanni Gu, G-U, wrote an article entitled, A Closer Look at U.S. Death Due to COVID-19. I found it to be an excellent article. It looked at total deaths, as we've talked about many times on this show and on my live videos. Farr's Law says that death is a fact. Everything else is an inference. We've all heard how many of these COVID deaths, or deaths in general, were being labeled COVID when they were actually from other things like heart attacks or cancer, trauma. So we've got to be careful there when we look at these total COVID deaths. And it's good to look at overall mortality. And that's what this paper did, looking at all-cause mortality, how many people have died in the United States in 2020. What they found was it's very similar to the last. They went back to 2014, and it was the curves were all very similar. And here's a quote from the article. Surprisingly, the deaths of older people stayed the same before and after COVID-19. Since COVID-19 mainly affects the elderly, experts expected an increase in the percentage of deaths in older age groups. However, this increase is not seen from the CDC data. In fact, the percentage of deaths among all groups remain relatively the same. End quote. So she showed a lot of very nice graphics on the 2020 curves. And what she did was break down that all-cause mortality since 2014 to 2020. She broke it down into the top 10 causes of death, like heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, etc. And when you look at those curves every year, you see this these top 10 deaths wax and wane a little bit, move up and down a little bit, until 2020 when the top 10 causes of death all dropped. And, of course, COVID death went up, but overall deaths were about the same. Unfortunately, that study was pulled, and you cannot go to Johns Hopkins' website anymore and find that. And the reason I saw that it was pulled was Hopkins said that it kind of gave the wrong message for people to not be as scared of COVID or as cautious. But we do have an archive version of that. We were able to capture an archive version. We put it on our Facebook page a week or so ago, so you can go check that out. Next headline, large study in the Annals of Internal Medicine published December 1st, 2020 that showed asymptomatic transmission was extremely rare. They followed 3,410 contacts out of 391 confirmed COVIDs. So there's 391 confirmed COVID, then they tracked their contacts, which was 3,400 roughly. 0.3% asymptomatic spread, 3.3% of the spread was in patients that had mild symptoms, 5.6% of the spread was in patients that had moderate symptoms, and for those that had the most severe symptoms, they spread the disease 6.2% of the time. Another study on asymptomatics, this was in the journal Nature Communications. It involved 10 million people, residents of Wuhan. They identified 300 asymptomatic cases. and they could not identify one single contact out of the 1,174 people who had been in close contact with these 300 asymptomatics. They found no positive contacts. So a couple of interesting studies on asymptomatic spread, which, again, that's kind of the basis for a lot of the quarantine, lockdown, mask, etc. Next study. First randomized controlled trial for effectiveness of mask on SARS-CoV-2. Of course, we've talked about many, many, many dozens of old studies on the ineffectiveness of masks for respiratory viruses such as influenza, but all these studies were basically influenza studies from years ago, not coronavirus studies. There was one real small study came out of China a few months ago we referenced, but it was only four people, not a great study. And any other studies showing effectiveness of masks are pretty, they're observational mostly and pretty poor quality. There wasn't a really good high-quality randomized controlled trial. So then some Danish guys got together and did one. 6,000 people, half of them wore the mask, half didn't. And the conclusion of that study was, let me find it real quick. Basically, the transmission rates were the same, or the infectivity rates were the same. 2.1% of people who did not wear the mask got infected, and 1.8% of people with a mask got infected. However, then they removed the people who did not adhere to proper mask usage, and the results became exactly the same, 1.8%. So that's interesting. The first big, large, randomized controlled trial, I did not see that reported really anywhere. In fact, those Danish guys had this data earlier, I think it was July or August, when they completed the study, and they could not get any journals to publish it. Finally, they were able to, though. Another study, deaths due to lockdown. So a lot of guys now and gals, a lot of researchers and epidemiologists are looking at deaths due to lockdown. And according to this study, 123,681 deaths due to lockdown. Now, that's from delayed medical care, you know, cancer care and coronary artery disease, etc. I'm sure some suicides, too. Another calculation by some, the economists can look at your years of education and predict longevity, access to care, poverty, unemployment, all these life factors that impact your life years. So they've estimated life years lost due to shutdown, 1,298,661. Article out of Japan, the number of suicides in October exceed all the COVID deaths in 2020. Interesting article I came across, this out of MIT, and in particular for people in West Texas or other places where there's not much humidity. Researchers at MIT collected data from 125 countries. They revealed that indoor relative humidity had the most significant correlation with daily new coronavirus cases and daily COVID-19 deaths. Very interesting article. And their recommendation was get an indoor humidifier and keep your humidity at 40 to 60%. Lubbock is very dry. We're also very obese, and we're also full of, we're in Roundup Ready Central here, glyphosate. So lots of things in the future we need to consider for Lubbock. Here's a Portugal article, a lawsuit in Portugal. The court deemed PCR tests are so inaccurate they cannot be used to make public policy, and quarantines and lockdowns are not constitutional based off a PCR test. There's another lawsuit that's about to start, and this is by some German lawyers. And German Corona Extra Parliamentary Inquiry Committee was formed July 10th, but they are now set to do a class action lawsuit, basically looking at the PCR test and how inaccurate it is, and that public policy is being made for lockdowns, etc., based off an inaccurate test. Here's a big one. The Federal Government Advisory Commission on Childhood Vaccines under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services met on December 3rd, 2020. The Department and the Department of Justice. So this committee convenes every once a quarter, every year, quarterly, and they publish a report. I don't see this report ever published in corporate media. But they met in the three-month period from August 16th to November 15th this year. 166 cases of vaccine injuries were compensated through the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. In the fiscal year of 2020, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program has paid out $218 million in damages due to vaccine injuries and death. as far as I know, Health Impact News is the only media source that I'm aware of that covers these quarterly meetings. Probably if we were trying to share this article, we would be accused of fake news. But this is a quarterly meeting by your government, paid for by you. You're paying these government officials to gather this data. And those $218 million paid out in damages is your money. That's taxpayer money. Interesting, a Harvard study published a few years ago estimated that only 1% of vaccine injuries are actually reported. That was a 2007 study out of Harvard. 1% actually reported. I've read another study where of those reported, two-thirds are denied. Next headline. This was big. This was Friday. Should have been all the headlines all weekend long, I would think. This is at my alma mater, Memorial Hermann in Houston. Three courageous ICU doctors held a press conference to tell the world. And they mention in the press conference, the reason they're holding the press conference is because they have repeatedly, individually and privately and publicly, tried to reach out to corporate media, politicians, public health authorities, and they've been ignored. So they decided to hold a press conference. I think they're still being ignored. But I encourage you, go look at the press conference. We'll have it up on our social media pages soon, or you can just look it up on your internet search. The main message, ivermectin. Ivermectin, which is an anti-parasitical drug, it's been around for years. It's on the WHO's list of designated really important medicines. Super cheap, super safe. Cheap and safe drug now has dozens and dozens of studies showing efficacy against COVID-19, both prophylactically, as early home treatment, and in the hospital setting. The doctor showed the studies during the press conference. Go look it up. Show it to your doctor, please. These papers started coming out in April. The first one I saw, it was a laboratory study on ivermectin and COVID. But then since then, dozens of studies have come out. These doctors gave an impassioned plea during the press conference. One brought to tears. That was Dr. Merrick. And Dr. Varnin at UT Houston, Dr. Corey. So these are doctors from around the country, but they met at Houston to announce this. You can look up IVMmeta.com. That's meta-analysis study where they combined 22 different studies and showed the benefit of ivermectin. I want to get to Morley, so I'm not going to go on and on and on. My main point here, we need to find some independent news sources. Unfortunately, my opinion is, since pharmaceutical companies are able to advertise on our media, which is a new thing. When I was a kid, that was not allowed. But since then, they've gobbled up 70%, according to Roger Ailes, to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He told RFK, 70% of their advertising dollars will come from pharmaceutical companies, in a non-election year. I don't think they're selling a whole lot of drugs based off those commercials, with two-thirds of the commercial being the side effects. It just doesn't sound very appealing. I don't think that's really why they're doing it. I think they're doing it so they can control the narrative on the news. I don't see many of these stories on the news, and again, my opinion, and it seems logical to conclude, if they run stories that are contrary or make the pharmaceutical companies look bad, then obviously their advertising dollars will probably dry up. Just a thought. Cheryl Atkinson, who used to work at CNN and now turned whistleblower. There's numerous media whistleblowers out there, but look up Cheryl Atkinson. Just listen to her information on how her stories that were painted pharmaceuticals in a negative light were put to the side by her producers and not, or by the executives and not shown. So find your own independent sources of information. It's time to do that. Think critically. Be informed.
One question I had for you before we move off that topic and get to Morley was, did you hear about the CDC coming out saying that, oh, yeah, we've tested blood samples back early from January, December even, and some news organizations, Fox News is one, and others, starting to report that maybe COVID-19 has been here since December of last year, not when we were told late February, early March kind of deal.
I have heard that. I've had some patients tell me they thought they had it. The symptoms were similar. I don't know that. And I haven't looked deeper into the tests. What did they use to test that blood? Because if it was a PCR test, we know that 80% of those are false positives if you have no symptoms. So, I mean, who knows? I don't know. I'll have to look deeper. But I have heard that. So we're going to shift now. You know, the whole focus is on the germ. And we from day one have said it's not the germ, it's the terrain. Quit talking germ. But it's hard not to at least get in there and try to give some positive news, like on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine we talked about earlier. Now, again, these are rescue medicines. When you've been a standard American, you've been eating processed grain and sugar, vegetable oils, iron-laden, iron-fortified foods, your iron-plump, vegetable oil rich and full of sugar, you're metabolically inflexible, you're a time sitting duck for this. I mean, it's a time bomb ready to go off and have a heart attack or cancer or Alzheimer's, but you're also a sitting duck for these germs to take you out. So again, there's rescue therapies. Dr. McCullough out of Baylor, we've talked about, and now these guys in Houston, their studies, those are rescue therapies. The vast majority of us should never even need that. It's all about making your immune system cells need to make energy, clear exhaust. We're going to talk about how iron disrupts that. There's studies coming out now showing how iron chelation should be considered in the treatment of COVID-19. But I just want to drive home this point that it's all about the mitochondria. And I've quoted this before, but it's so important. So I'm going to quote him again. Dr. Richard Kelly, professor of pediatrics, Johns Hopkins University, Kennedy Krieger Institute. Dr. Kelly and his colleagues are often called to the Vaccine Compensation Injury Court to testify on behalf of the vaccines and the government to say, no, those vaccines did not injure this child. So this is Dr. Richard Kelly, quote, "I also find with a high degree of medical certainty that the set of immunizations administered to Yates at age 11 months while he was ill was the immediate cause of his autistic regression because of the effect of these immunizations to further impair the ability of his weakened mitochondria to supply adequate amounts of energy for the brain, the highest energy-consuming tissue in the body." So, Yates, the 11-month-old Yates, was very susceptible to injury from the ingredients in the immunizations all given at one time because of a weakened mitochondria. That's the highlight. I'm not using this quote, which that quote came out of How to End the Autism Epidemic by J.B. Handley. We've interviewed him before. Go back on the archives and look or get his book and read it. And we're not getting into that debate today. It's not a debate. I mean, it's settled. Can vaccines injure you? Yes, they can. I just said we paid out $200 million this year. The point is, Dr. Kelly's saying it's these weakened mitochondria that are going to make you susceptible. We know this. There's so much literature. It's what we talk about every first Monday with Morley. What makes you more susceptible to heart disease? Weakened mitochondria. Cancer? Weakened mitochondria. Alzheimer's? Weakened mitochondria. COVID-19? Weakened mitochondria. I can't say it any more clearly. So let's shift the focus once again off of rescue medicine and off of the censorship and the lack of integrity in our media and the trickle-down effect of that onto fear into our society. And let's start talking about the truth, which is your body is well-equipped, well-designed to fight this germ and all other germs and to function and live normally all the days of your life. All right, Morley, that was really long-winded, but we're going to focus on the fact our immune system is amazing. But when it's full of iron, it doesn't work amazingly. In fact, it drives more free radical production, more oxidative stress and damage and inflammation. I think everyone now is well aware that inflammatory chaos is what's killing COVID patients. Why? Why are they so inflamed? Why have they not been able to rein in that inflammation? We need to put the spotlight on iron, and more researchers are, and more doctors, still a very minority of doctors, are looking at iron. So, Morley, welcome to the show. Thank you for sitting by. I'm sure you're salivating, chomping at the bit, trying to get in on this. So, what say you?
No, I'm just enjoying the theme. And I think I saw an interesting quote. It's kind of a parody of a famous saying, but it's people will believe anything but the truth. And I think that's where we find ourselves in society. And we've talked about it before, but this whole COVID thing is a joke. I'm sorry. If there's nothing real about it, I know people get sick. I know it's a very, people are all worked up about it. But Louis Pasteur was a fraud. Anthony Fauci is a fraud. All the numbers coming out about cases is a fraud. The election is a fraud. What part of this do not people, why do people see all of this fraudulent behavior around them, but yet they believe that this masquerading and fear around a made-up infection is real? It's a real sad commentary of society. And I really applaud your digging to find the information that you found. And the truth is there. But the people have become vaccinated, F-A-C-T-S-inated. They don't know what facts are anymore. And if people are honestly using the little black box called the TV as a source of information, then you don't get what's going on. We are in the midst of a massive global psyops. And if anyone, and forgive me, my ire is up listening to all this, but I wish people could direct their frustration and their fear to the total lack of awareness that the number of deaths by heart disease and cancer and medical incompetence, the top three leading causes of death, outperform COVID 1,000 to 1. There are 1,000 more deaths by those three forms of disease than COVID. And people have been conditioned and taught to be fearful of a hoax. And I think, you know, it's interesting you made the comment about the humidity. That's got my wheels turning, trying to figure out what that's all about. And yes, as you noted, Lubbock is a very dry town. Lubbock is a very copperless town. I think you noted that there may be a weight issue. I don't know that I've ever really noticed that. I mean, I've always visited but never lived there. But what I think is playing in the background, to your point, is that much of the country and probably much of the world is struggling with iron dysregulation. And it shows up in blood work. It very clearly shows up in blood work. But those tests are not routinely done by any doctor on the planet because they've been trained to avoid the truth, trained to look a certain way. Look over here. Don't look over there. And because people don't know what their ferritin level is, because people don't know what their copper status is, because people don't know what their ceruloplasmin status is, they are overreacting hyperbolically to a psyops campaign being fueled by the media that is totally in bed with whoever's behind all this. And I just, what I marvel at is why the military hasn't stepped in to take over the control of these media conglomerates, because they're just propaganda on. And there is no truth coming out of these sources, and that would include most of the medical publications that are being read around the country. There are at least two editors, one at Lancet and one at New England Journal of Medicine, who resigned because they couldn't stand the lies that were being written about in their publication. And the public doesn't know that. But I think this entire thing has gotten completely out of hand. And the loving parent in me wants to slap the children out there and say, wake up. Wake up. Because this whole thing is challenging your sense of independence on every level. What's the mask about? Taking away your right to free speech. What's the lockdown about? Taking away your right to free assembly. And if people don't understand that this is a constitutional crisis, it's playing out right in front of our eyes. And this whole charade about the presidential election, it's like, oh my gosh, I mean, are there really people out there who believe that Joe Biden won this election? Seriously? I mean, it's just, it's absolutely beyond me that some segment of the public really believes that this is a fair election. So forgive the chest beating, Dr. Ben, and the stepping on sensitive topics, but it's just, you know, this whole discussion, we got to be careful, because this discussion can devolve into that never answerable question. When did you stop beating your wife? You can't answer that question. Because the minute you engage in answering that question, you've implicated yourself. And this is on the same scale as all of the 65 years of debate about cholesterol. Does cholesterol cause heart disease? Ooh, let's debate that for two generations. Two generations were left flapping in the breeze because all of the debate was about the particle size, and was it like sand or was it like cotton, and oh, booga booga this, booga booga that. No one ever knowing that iron had been introduced into the food system in a very toxic way via wheat flour, and that there's very clear evidence in the uptick in inflammation that resulted from that, which causes cholesterol to rise. And when cholesterol mixes with iron, guess what? It gets rusty. But we weren't supposed to know that. But that truth has been presented time and time again, but the medical system that's owned by the people who are controlling the COVID crisis don't want us to know the truth. And so then we're left with beacons of light, like You're the Cure, and practitioners like Dr. Ben, who are really devoted to pumping out solid, credible, verifiable, Veritas-based information that the public quakes in fear because they're still listening to the TV. And so I think it's an unfortunate juxtaposition in society, and I think people need to wake up. And to me, it's fascinating. I was most intrigued by your comment about ivermectin, because I'm just finishing a book about parasites and how the whole thing that we've been missing, Dr. Ben, is that in a low copper, high iron body, the chance for parasitic infection goes up like a rocket. Mm. And we're not supposed to talk about parasites in a country like ours, because we're very sophisticated. We're not a third world country like Africa or India. You know, that's people who don't have sanitized water. Well, no, actually, there are known parasites that cause all sorts of conditions. And guess what parasites do? Parasites live on iron, and they use up copper in the body. Ah, what a perfect cure. They say, what does ivermectin do? Ivermectin stops that insanity. And you know where you can buy ivermectin? At Seed and Feed Store. And it's used in the horse community. I'm sure your listeners know that.
Yeah, I had a patient tell me this week that Tractor Supply, our feed and seed store around here, had a sign up.
You don't need a doctor for this.
But they had a sign up that said ivermectin does not cure COVID. Don't buy it from us. Which I would recommend you talk to your doctor and get a prescription, and listen to the Friday press conference, and they tell you the exact dose.
There you go. That's great. The thing is, this war that we're in the midst of, this is a war. It's an information war. It's a integrity war, and it's about independence versus dependence. We're back to 1775. And just so the listeners have an understanding of my background, I have an ancestor. His name was Thomas Robbins, and he was delivering milk into Boston at 4 o'clock in the morning on April 19th, 1775. And he got arrested by the Redcoats. He got arrested by the British, because they were all British citizens. But he got arrested by the Redcoats, and they wanted his horse that was leading his wagon. And they released him at noon, and he ran back to town, little town called Lexington. People have probably heard of it. He was a Minuteman, and he fought in the afternoon battle. There was a battle in the morning, there was a battle in the afternoon. Now, here's the trick question. How old was Thomas Rodman when he ran back from halfway to Boston back to Lexington, which is about 15 miles? How old was he when he did that? He was 72 years old.
Wow.
And I'm 68. And I marvel that this guy had the gumption to run back and fight in the battle. And I'm very grateful to know this information, which was written up in a biography of Paul Revere. And they talk about this Thomas Robbins in that book, which is kind of fun. And I've been to his gravesite in Lexington several times to thank him for his courage and allowing me to be here. And what I really lament the most is that with increasing evidence, we don't have enough backbone in this country. I really am shocked at the willingness with which people are willing to lay down their lives by wearing a mask or honoring some stupid lockdown or you know, quaking in the corner thinking they might get this mythical bug. And I think it's time for us to step up, get our backbone, get our pitchforks, and start taking some aggressive action to clear the swamp. The swamp, that phrase has double entendre. We need to clear the political swamp, and we need to clear our biological swamp. And what's happened over the course of 75 years, since 1941, I guess that's more than 75 years, but because it's almost 80 years now. What's happened in the course of 80 years is that the farming system and the food system and the pharmaceutical system, all owned and controlled by the same people who are bringing us COVID-19, wink, wink, have turned our bodies into swamps. And I didn't understand what a swamp was until I lived in Louisiana. The metals that dominate a swamp, iron and manganese. How about that? Not a lot of copper in the swamp. And so what we need to do is get really smart about what's really going on. Recognize that the numbers that they're throwing out there are based on cases, based on a testing system, which is completely fallacious and flawed. There's nothing about the PCR test that is scientifically valid. And so people have got to come to terms with that. The people in the hospitals in Lubbock and in your region, again, I think it may be more environmental, both external environment, the humidity and the glyphosate, and the internal environment just being chock full of iron, and people don't know that. And it's time for people to wake up, smell the coffee. What's a good way to stop parasites? Drink coffee. Isn't that interesting? And so the thing is, we've got to step up our game and remind ourselves that we are American citizens, that we were born out of a quest for independence. We have that birthright, and I think the information that Dr. Ben shares on this radio show is second to none. I'm honored to be a part of it on a monthly basis, to be able to share the insights that I have, and I just want to reinforce and redouble his point that it's not about the bugs, folks. It's about your mitochondria and their ability to make energy. And they don't make as much energy when they're drowning in iron. Yeah. They love copper. And what the core four that Dr. Ben talks about and the root cause protocol that I talk about, which are basically a Venn diagram of each other, they overlap quite a bit. But the whole point is to lower your iron footprint and increase the amount of bioavailable copper so you can regain your independence, regain the metabolic integrity that's supposed to run your body, and allow you to deal with and eviscerate whatever the toxins or chemical agents are out there and the booga-booga bugs. We were designed to do this naturally. It's part of God's plan. And I think it's time for people to let go the contemporary psychodrama and regain their confidence that they have the wherewithal and that there is a roadmap, and the roadmap would start with contacting Veritas Medical, and then you can use the RCT as a support mechanism to that process. But I think this to get into a debate about this or that, I think is very fraught with controversy. But I'm absolutely thrilled to hear about the press conference on ivermectin, because it just, to me, it's the beacon of hope that the answers out there are very simple. But I think what's important for people to understand is that both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin are parasitic medications. It was never a virus, folks. It was a parasite that caused a viral reaction. And because you're chock full of iron, we think it's a disease. And so we've just got to step back from this and recognize that what is it, what does our immune system require in order to fight parasites? You got to have energy, and you got to have copper to have energy.
Well,
and that's what it's all about.
When we get back from the break, we're going to dive a little more into that, and specifically iron, too, and how iron chelation therapies are being published now in the literature. So, but I do want to say right before we run to the break, you can look at that press conference. COVID-19criticalcare.com is a website where these many, many, many critical care specialists, these are ICU doctors, pulmonologists, critical care specialists from multiple medical centers around the country and even the world, COVID-19criticalcare.com, and I'm sure they have a Facebook page, and you can listen to the whole press conference. Second thing I do want to mention, Journal of American College of Cardiology, August 18th, 2020. That's the article where you can read. There are many, many, many review articles, but this is a big review article, very current, just came out in August, where the American College of Cardiology says it's not the saturated fat causing heart disease. You know, Morley had touched on that. There's a great book called Fat and Cholesterol Don't Cause Heart Attacks, and Statins Are Not the Solution. That's by Dr. Paul Roche, R-O-S-C-H, and the co-director of the Framingham study. On the back cover of that book says the biggest basically fraud of our time, this Framingham study did not show that saturated fat and cholesterol caused heart attacks. So you'll check that book out, full of data, full of research, published studies, and check out the American College of Cardiology article also. Last thing, Morley mentioned the PCR test. I just want to quote from Dr. Fauci. This is July 16, 2020, This Week in Virology podcast. You can go look it up. Quote, if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, the chances of it being replication confident are minuscule. You almost never can culture a virus from a 37 threshold cycle, or even 36, end quote. That's Dr. Anthony Fauci, July 16, 2020. What he's talking about is a PCR test. If you get cycle above 35, it's really worthless. It's, you don't get any replication competent. You don't have enough virus in you to infect anybody, and all the cycle thresholds that we're running, as far as I know, are 40 to 45.
That's right.
The state of Florida just passed, congratulations, Florida, that governor out there has been making some great moves, but they just passed a law that labs now must identify their cycle threshold so that doctors at least know, and patients will know on their PCR positive test, what was their cycle threshold. And according to Dr. Fauci, if it's above 35, basically throw it in the trash. When we get back from the break, we'll dive deeper into iron, copper dysregulation, its effect on your immune system. Check out rcp123.org for Morley's stuff. His root cause protocol, veritaswellness.health, is our wellness class. The next one starts 1st of January. Learn this, truth, and more. We'll be right back. You're the cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Brought to you by VeritasWellness.com. Check out VeritasWellness.com. Sign up for wellness classes at VeritasWellness.com. Also, VeritasMedical.com. You can check out the archived shows right there at VeritasMedical.com. And so, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, you're listening to You're the Cure. Let's go to the text line. If you have a question along the way, you can always text it into the program at 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. First text is, how does one get around the mask mandate for grocery stores and all? Realize some cities are more strict in not accepting medical mask exemption. What can we do?
I'm just a doctor, so that's more of a political and lawyer question, I think. And there are more and more lawsuits coming out because of the, mostly, again, based off PCR being so inaccurate. So, I don't know. I would defer that probably to more of a political and legal expert. But definitely there's medical reasons to avoid that. That's what the medical exemption that Governor Abbott here in Texas put forth, because there are unintended negative consequences medically of chronic mask usage. So talk with your doctor about that if you get, you know, headaches. I've had a patient with cellulitis, horrible eczema outbreak right where the mask is. Headache, fatigue, brain fog, shortness of breath. There's lots of different things that our patients have reported or that I've seen in the literature. I mean, there's studies even on this that decrease in cardiopulmonary function with chronic mask usage. So that's more of a political question again, so I'm not going to dive deep into that right now. I just want to reaffirm for everybody, COVID-19criticalcare.com is the ivermectin press conference, and then you can go to C19study.com, 192 studies as of today. This gets updated every day. 192 hydroxychloroquine studies showing 100% of those showing positive benefit in if you start it early. 126 of those are peer-reviewed, by the way. Mountains of evidence not being reported that I'm seeing on local, state, or national. So that's why the impassioned plea during the press conference. But let's move on, because we kind of took the first three quarters of the show already, so we got 15, 20 or so minutes, Morley. And I really want to get the point across, because you've talked about, you sent me articles on iron and iron chelation in particular. So let's just focus a little bit on that, and why do you think that is so beneficial to decrease the iron? And this is really coming out more and more. I had a doctor email me this morning even about this iron excess and iron overload increasing susceptibility to COVID-19. So what say you on iron and iron chelation?
Too much iron totally changes the responsiveness of the immune system. Again, what we have to understand is that there's this amorphous thing called the immune system. What I'm increasingly coming to realize, it's the electric fence that protects us from all manner of threat. And what is that electric fence? It's the 40 quadrillion mitochondria working in unison to create energy. And it's absolutely mysterious and amazing, but that's what the immune system is. It's the innate ability to create energy to respond to the threat. And the immune system, all the soldiers of the immune system, require energy. All of the, whether we're talking the innate or the adaptive immune system, whether we're talking about macrophages or dendritic cells or T cells, B cells, doesn't matter what we're talking about, they all require energy. But the T cells in particular, because of their pivotal role in this whole dynamic, they have intelligence. And there are T cells called memory T cells. They remember things. Well, in order to remember, you got to have energy. And what kills the memory of the T cells is oxidative stress. And in particular, it's when superoxide mixes with nitric oxide, and it creates a chemical called O-NO, also called peroxynitrite. Well, that chemical kills the memory of the memory T cells. And what guarantees its memory is adequate levels of nitric oxide. Interesting. Now, there's a whole field of study around using nitric oxide to stop COVID-19. There's a drug called remdesivir that does that in spades. And so, again, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the role of nitric oxide in the body. And I think it really, when push comes to shove, I would say that there's two sides to the whole iron dynamic in our body. One side is called iron recycling, and that's a natural process where the body has to recycle the red blood cells and rebuild them. And that's run by a copper-based chemical or enzyme called ferrooxidase. We've talked about it many times. The other side of iron is called iron sequestration. And that's when the body senses a threat and it uses nitric oxide to direct the entire process of iron sequestration in response to some kind of threat. And guess what? Copper runs both ferrooxidase and nitric oxide. How about that? And so if there's too much iron in your body, the body can't think properly. And the mitochondria can't make energy properly. And when it overwhelms the copper, those two mechanisms of dealing with iron, either the iron recycling or the iron sequestration, don't work properly. And what the articles that I sent Dr. Ben really played up was how important it was to know the ferritin level of the patients, because ferritin is a cytokine. We've been trained like circus bears to think of it solely as a storage protein. Oh, it's a passive treasure chest of iron. No, it's a highly reactive element, and when ferritin shows up in our blood, it totally changes our body's intelligence about how to respond to threat. And what these articles are highlighting, Dr. Perricone is probably the most significant. Back in July, they did a major study of just using chemical iron chelators, desferoxamine in particular, and they were able to literally stop COVID in its tracks by pulling the iron out. Now, not everyone has subject to that or may be in a position of having to require that, but in its absence, there are wonderful chelators that we can use. One in particular that I think is very effective is called iDetox, and it's available to, it's relying on natural chemicals and natural substances to pull the iron out of our blood so that we don't have to worry about this increasing iron footprint. So that it's important for people to realize that there's more than one way to skin a cat. We all know that intuitively, but when it comes to a condition like we're dealing with around the world, it's what's really come to light in a very significant way is that iron is the foundation. It's the swamp that allows the crisis to occur, and it's called a cytokine storm. The macrophages and the T cells start to yell at each other, and it creates this chemical storm inside the body, but it's being born out of excess ferritin in the blood. And there are mechanisms to get rid of it. And there are interventions like desferoxamine. There are supplements like iDetox or apolactoferrin or quercetin. And in fact, iDetox has both of those substances, apolactoferrin and quercetin, in it. And so I think it's important for people to realize is that there are very simple solutions to this ironic crisis that has people quaking in fear.
Yeah. I just want to remind everybody that our American food started getting fortified in the 1940s. They started putting iron into the food because they thought we were all anemic. What we didn't realize then, as so often happens in medicine, we see half the story and we don't see the full, complete picture. We didn't realize that the body had such an amazing recycling system for iron. The red blood cells are dying all the time, and you make new ones all the time. Well, red blood cells are full of iron. I think about 80% of your iron is in these red blood cells. So when they die and get gobbled up, that iron needs to go somewhere. Where it goes is not the trash can. You don't poop it out, pee it out. You recycle it back in to go make more red blood cells. It's an amazing system when it's working properly. We didn't fully appreciate and understand that, so we, the nutrition gurus thought we needed to add a bunch of iron to our food, extra iron, including iron filings and baby formula I have seen in some articles. Unbelievable. Turns out we only need about a milligram a day in our diet. One cup of multigrain Cheerios, last time I checked, had 18 milligrams in one cup, not one bowl. Most people get two or three cups. 18 milligrams where we need one. So that's a little background for new listeners on this iron thingy. So how to get rid of it when you're not in the middle of a crisis, just as a routine medical healthy thing to do, is add blood donation into your routine, you know, quarterly or twice a year or whatever. Donate blood. Studies show that people who donate blood routinely are healthier. So that's one way to deal with iron, just on a routine basis.
And again, what people need to understand is that there's been a very long, century-long campaign to train us to believe that we are anemic and copper toxic. That's been a long-standing mantra that people are supposed to know, you're anemic and you're copper toxic, when in fact the truth is just the opposite. And that's what many of the conversations that Dr. Ben and I have begin to expose the reality of the situation, is that in fact we are copper deserts. And because we are copper deserts, by virtue of copper not being in the soil, not being in the plant, not being in the animals, then they're not in the human. And what they learned in 1928 was that when an animal is deprived copper in its diet, it will accumulate iron in its liver, then in its endocrine gland, then in its brain. And that's exactly where the American populace and most of the civilized world finds themselves now, is in the grips of iron-induced oxidative stress that is causing all manner of chronic disease. That's the very mechanism for this whole process, and it's so subtle about how they change the copper side of the equation and then change the iron side of the equation. Iron is everywhere in the food system. It isn't just in infant formula. It isn't just in cereal. It's everywhere. And when you look for it, you'll see iron fortification. Wink, wink. Well, that sounds good, doesn't it? No, those are iron filings. And then when they're not iron filings, they're using 9 different forms of iron have been identified as accepted additions to the American diet. And all 9 forms of those iron additions have all been classified as carcinogenic. All 9 cause cancer. And that's an established fact. And again, it's important to ground decisions in fact and not this mythical fairy tale that we're living in right now. And that's the real challenge for us all.
Yeah. I just read an article the other day, and this was on Dr. Mercola's website, specifically, but I think the title of the article was Iron and Vegetable Oils, a Deadly Combination. And it went into talking about the oxidative stress. When you put those two ingredients together, it's just like gas on a fire. It just explodes the body into oxidative stress. And I want to remind people that heart attacks, those are a new modern phenomenon. The first reported heart attack in the American medical literature was in 1912. There was one case in the entire medical literature. One of the founding fathers of modern medicine and founder of John Hopkins Medical School, Sir William Osler, was interviewed at the end of his career, and they asked him, how many heart attacks did you see? And, of course, he was practicing in the late 1800s and right at the turn of the century. And he said none, zero. He could remember about 20 cases of angina, but that was probably related to valvular disease from infection, but none, zero. Founder of modern medicine never saw a heart attack, and then the first reported one was 1912, and then we see this slow escalation. The vegetable oils were coming in, Crisco in particular, cottonseed oil, about that time, and then you add the iron fortified food in shortly after. And you see this huge rise. And the number one killer, as Morley mentioned, heart disease is going to kill and does kill actively way more than COVID-19 or any other disease. It's the number one killer by far. And the data and the literature is clear, and it's been clear for a long time. It's this inflamed oxidative mechanism that's driving all this. Get an oxidized LDL. I had a lady in my office the other day. Her total cholesterol was a little high. I don't remember the exact number, maybe 220. Her LDL was, by the standard on the Quest lab form, was a little high. HDL was awesome, it was like 65. Anything above 40 is great. Yeah. Above 50 is super good. And her triglycerides were less than 100. And in a woman, the HDL to triglyceride ratio is more predictive than anything. But her doctor put her on a statin as primary prevention. And the literature is very clear that primary prevention in a woman, the evidence doesn't really support that at all. But I wanted to help her understand even more, so we pulled an oxidized LDL on her. That's a lab. That's a test you can run. Any doctor can run this. He's probably not, because we weren't trained to. But the evidence in the literature is clear. It's very predictive. Get an oxy LDL, and hers is perfect.
What are the parameters for an oxidized LDL? What's the range and what's considered good? Do you have that committed to memory yet?
I believe, don't quote me, on the Quest lab, it was less than 68 was great. I think optimal is less than 40. And I could be a little off on that 68, but roughly that's what it is. And the problem with just looking at a plain old regular LDL is, I mean, what if it is high, quote-unquote high, but what if it's not oxidized? It's not inflamed. If you're not inflamed, if you stewarded your health. So it's just another little piece of information that you need to learn. And unfortunately, our medical education is not fully up to speed. The curriculum doesn't change fast enough.
Yeah, I think, and that's the important thing, is that the education of doctors, all manner of doctors, whether it's an MD or a naturopath or chiropractor or whatever, their education is not complete. And I think that's been one of the most important outcomes of the conversations that I've had with Dr. Ben, is to realize that it's a breakdown of the educational system. I think what is important, though, is more and more doctors need to step up their game and be a lot more curious. And again, I spell that word a little differently. I put CU-RIOUS, so they see the symbol for copper, and begin to question, could a lack of bioavailable copper be at the very epicenter of this situation that I'm treating in a client? And I think almost without exception, it is. The other thing is that I think the other part that's maybe missing in the organized medical system, again, broadly speaking, is there's no yardstick that I know of for measuring the energy level of the patient. You can put calipers on your car battery, and it'll tell you exactly how many volts are pumping out. But there aren't calipers for humans that are recognized or are routinely used, and I think that's where one of the major breakdowns is when we're dependent on coffee to try to wake up, when we are constantly feeling fatigued, if we are constantly feeling run down or getting, you know, sniffles or colds or whatever, those are clear indications that there's not enough energy in your force field to keep you in balance, keep you in homeostasis. You know, absent the medical calipers, we've got to be mindful of the fact that if we are sensing symptoms of fatigue, having trouble getting out of bed in the morning, or whatever, however it might manifest, that we've got to step up our game. And we've got to do more to lower the iron footprint and do more to increase the bioavailability of copper, because that's what our mitochondria run on. That's the fuel of the mitochondria, is bioavailable copper. All the medical literature will beat their chest about how much iron is in the hemes and all the iron sulfur clusters and this and that. But at the end of the day, it's bioavailable copper that's running the show.
Yeah.
You've got waiters and chefs, and there's a bunch of waiters that need to be tended to. And those are all the iron molecules, but the real brains behind the outfit, the real creativity, is driven by copper-dependent chefs running our mitochondria. And people need to really embrace the beauty of that, because that's really how we were designed from day one.
Yeah. Well, I want to end it with a couple of quotes here. Marcia Angel, she was the editor of New England Journal of Medicine, quote, "It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my two decades as editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. And then Dr. Richard Horton, editor-in-chief, The Lancet, the world's most respected medical journal. Quote, much of the scientific literature, perhaps half, may simply be untrue, afflicted by studies with small sample size, tiny effects, invalid exploratory analysis, and flagrant conflicts of interest, together with an obsession for the pursuing fashionable trends of dubious importance. Science has taken a turn towards darkness. Last quote, this is from Daniel Neve, and he's the author of an article, Closing the 17-Year Gap Between Scientific Evidence and Patient Care. This is from University Affairs Journal, January 17th, 2017. Quote, not many patients would be happy to hear that there's a lag of about 17 years between when health scientists learn something significant from rigorous research and when the health practitioners change their patient care as a result. End quote. Americans need to be informed, be critical thinkers, and unfortunately have to find independent media outlets, like Wade Wilkes here in Lubbock, Texas. Independent media outlets that will report these things, like the impassioned plea of the doctors down in Houston on Friday holding a press conference. I still don't understand. Well, I do. But I would plead with our local news outlets to carry that news conference. Go get the clips of it. Go interview the doctors. Ivermectin, highly effective prophylactically. Why is every healthcare worker in Lubbock, Texas not on it? Highly effective is outpatient treatment. I have so many patients call our clinic. My doctor told me to just stay home. No, there's nothing he can do. Wait and go to the ER if I get worse. Go look at the press conference. Ivermectin as prophylactic, as early home treatment, even in the hospitalized patient, and even in post-COVID symptom sufferers, go check it out. Find independent news outlets and go support them. I get a lot of my medical information from greenmedinfo.com, Dr. Mercola, mercola.com, mercola.com. Health Impact News is a great source. Robert F. Kennedy's Children's Health Defense Fund. Which, funny, he just put an article out that I think it was Great Britain is starting to look at natural news, health news sources like this as a national security threats or something like that. I just saw the headline. I'll have to dive deeper into that. It's harder and harder to find. But you can do it. Go find it and go get educated.
Real quick.
Last word.
Those sites that you just mentioned are wonderful sites of information, but they are mineral agnostic.
Yes, agreed.
They don't understand the catalytic role of minerals to provide energy. So people need to read them, but understand that they're not, even with those forthcoming websites, they're still missing a key piece of the puzzle, which is how is energy made in the body and how is energy used to protect us from pathogens.
There you go. Add the deeper level of understanding. Go to veritasmedical.com. Go to the radio show archive page, and we have all of Morley's shows archived on a particular section. So find that, and you'll learn all the mineral truth you need to learn, and the more that we add every month. RCP123.org is Morley's website. Go join his social media circles and other avenues to learn stuff. Of course, VeritasWellness.health is where we have our monthly wellness class. Go sign up. Our next class starts in January. We want to teach you how to not need a doctor. You're the cure. Go be the cure. Thank you, Morley. Until next time.
Absolutely.
May God bless us all.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Catch it every Monday morning from 9 a.m. to sometimes a little past 10 a.m. So no problem at all. We'll catch you back here next week, right here on AM 580 and 95.9. Hey, folks, Hub City.